And I am a sexaholic.
Amen.
Let's begin this meeting with a moment of silence for all those inside and outside our fellowship, SA and Essanon and Essateen, who still suffer, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change,
the courage to change the things I can,
and the wisdom to know the difference. All right. Good morning, everybody.
We got about 20 people outside. Is there anything we can know about that?
Well, we could seat a few people up here on the floor and back over here. And we could open that door back there to let some air in.
Smart, right?
Hey.
We are going to want to leave a little bit of room in the aisle for people to come up so that they can share and ask questions. All right.
Just enough to break the food.
Does that help any? All right. Welcome to this session on a lust-free marriage. We are being recorded. I'm the panelist, Dennis R. from the SA group in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Each of us will share for a few minutes on this topic, and then we'll open the meeting for sharing and questions. We ask that those of you who choose to share step up to this microphone so that those who listen to the recording can follow the discussion. We ask that you be mindful of the time and allow others a chance to share. And I'm going to give you about 2 or 3 minutes, and then I'll hold up my watch. Okay, I'm going to share for just a little bit here. Can everybody hear me?
Yeah.
All right. I have to have some notes here to keep myself on track and to keep myself from getting lost in my grandiosity. Probably because I'm a recovering sexaholic. My sobriety date is November the 5th, 2005. I have a sponsor. I go to meetings in our SA meetings in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I also am an active member of another fellowship, which I attend meetings pretty regularly. I work the steps, sometimes better than others. And I have had a spiritual experience, and I endeavor to keep that spiritual experience alive a day at a time, by trying to do my understanding of what God's will is for my life. And one of that is sponsorship, passing it on to others. So this is part of my effort today. You guys are actually keeping me sober. All right. We're going to talk about a lust-free marriage. Obviously, everything I say assumes some degree of sobriety or desire for sobriety and marriage. Okay. I am very much a fantasy addict, so this is my approach to this question. Others might have a very different approach, and that's fine, and I hope that anybody who would look at this from a very different perspective than I present today will come and share. To me, the main problem of the sexaholic centers in the mind, not the body. This is where the insanity of the first drink is. This is where our disease is in the neurotransmitters and the brain structures. And this is where the solution is, an entire spiritual experience, a change in how I think and feel and act and react to the world, which I by myself cannot bring about. My willpower and all my self-knowledge, all my understanding is inadequate to bring about this change. So that's why I have to have the steps that lead to the spiritual experience. Now, I've told you that I was a fantasy addict and who acts out sexually. And I can tell you all the different ways that I act out sexually, but that's not the point of this today. Generally speaking, the solution is always the opposite of the disease and the problem, generally speaking. And in recovery, not just in marriage, but the goal in all relationships is intimacy and giving with no strings attached. And when I say that, I don't say that as any kind of an authority. That's what keeps me sober. That's what I read from our literature. How do I live in intimacy with my partner, Catherine, of 37 years, and give with no strings attached? What do you do? Those are nice words, but what do I do? This is what I do. I focus on being here now. Being here now. And I ask myself a lot of questions to prompt myself. When it comes to the being here now, I think of it in terms of four words. Me, her, or me and you, here, now. Me, am I in touch with myself? Am I in my body? Can I feel my fingertips and my toes? Or am I off someplace else? Am I numb? Okay. Am I in a fantasy obsession? Am I in touch with me? You, which would be Catherine, am I focused on her? Do I make eye contact? Do we touch hands across the table at a restaurant? Am I here? Am I here right now? And the way I do that is I say, am I where my butt is? Am I in this chair? Because we all know how we can leave this room in an instant. My mind is a movie factory. I could tell you stories about the different movies my mind tried to manufacture during my struggles to get here, you know, and so on and so forth. And my mind will instantaneously go someplace else with the trigger, and I wake up and I find myself in another emotional affair and adultery outside my relationship right here. Okay? So, am I here right now? Am I where my butt is? Am I where my hands are? Am I here? How can you do this? If you know, we're an action program, not a thinking program. There is no chapter into thinking. You know, there's no chapter into feelings. We're an action program. We also know that it was our best thinking that got us here. It wasn't our worst thinking. I'm a good person. I can actually say later, why did you commit malpractice and have an affair with your patient? It seemed like the right thing to do at the time. We laugh. Relax. Okay. So how can you be here right now? Well, I've already mentioned a little of it, but feel your fingertips and wiggle your toes inside your shoes. Wiggle your foot around inside your shoes. Okay. Sit up straight. Okay. Or straighten out. You know, if you're horizontal, straighten out your legs and feel your body. Okay. If you're sitting up, get your head, your spine, and your pelvic bones straight, all aligned under one another. Have your feet flat on the floor and breathe. I mean, you can do that all in just a second and just finish it or take a couple of deep breaths and look your partner in the eye. All right. And finally, me, you, here, now. Now is not yesterday. Now is not tomorrow. If you stop and think about it, now is all that exists. A little obvious fact that instantaneously our minds toss that out. But now is all that exists. So am I here now with my partner? Questions that I ask myself, I learn to do these things and try to do them pretty quickly, automatically. It's almost like an inventory. Is Catherine, my wife, a person? Is she a child of God just like I am? Or is she an object for my mind? Am I objectifying her? Am I seeing her, or am I seeing her clothes or parts of her body, or, you know, panty lines and bras showing through clothes? But, you know, who am I in touch with? You know, is she a person to me? Now, this is something that others might have different feelings about, but this is something that's very important for me, and it's really a political thing, and it's really about power. We live in a patriarchal society, and we're all enculturated into that. Do I see Catherine on the same level, the same plane as myself, or is she higher or lower than me? Now, I can't say anything about sexual politics or the issues of what's outside of our group, our society. We're all aware of those things. But for me, if I'm higher than her, better than her, that's not a good place for me to be. That's that arrogance. Those are things that don't necessarily start with sexual triggers, but they take me places that are not good. Am I lower than her? One of my big scripts is being a victim. And, you know, am I lower than her? You know, do I have to have her? Do I depend on her? So, am I on the same plane with her? Are we equals? Another question is her will supposed to match mine? You know, is she supposed to want to have sex when I want to have sex? Is she supposed to want to do this family activity when I want to do it? You know, not when I'm busy doing this, you know, she should wait. No. Is her will supposed to match mine or God's will for her? Okay. And my goal of intimacy, you, me, here, now, is that really my goal right now? Or am I really just seeking to medicate myself? A story from a book that I read, I'm sure some of you have read it, helped to make this example for me. A young married couple went to a movie. The movie had a lot of information in it that stimulated a lot of awarenesses and thoughts and feelings and maybe anxieties. Left the movie, got in their car. It was one of those perfect moments. You know, it was raining outside. You know, they were alone, you know, and they began becoming intimate with one another. And one of them realized that the material in the movie had really stimulated a lot of feelings and awarenesses, and that he was seeking to medicate rather than to be there with his partner. And so he stopped. That made her angry. And then ensued some angry words, but it eventually moved into a discussion of their feelings that transpired during the movie. And that led to a much longer discussion and eventually intimacy, and then eventually, in this instance, sexual intimacy. And so I, as a sex addict and a recovering sexaholic, I have to ask myself, am I seeking my drug? Am I seeking to medicate myself? Which in my case was always to pump up my sagging ego. And it was always to sort of reinflate me. Another thing I try to think about, and this is not something I'm very good at, is in my relationship with my spouse, in the marriage, I am trying to create a space. You could literally think of it as a room or a space. It has boundaries. Okay, and it has occupants. In the bedroom, do I have to kick people out of the bedroom before I can have sexual intimacy with my wife? Okay. A way for me to do that is to go get by myself and get on my knees and just ask God to let me give all those, all my paths to the God of my understanding. But it's not just the bedroom, it's everywhere. Our intimacy space has boundaries. It has her and I as the occupants when it's just the two of us alone and it's not family. And I try to ask myself, what are we working on? Real love is not it's not an object, it's not a commodity, and it's not something I get. Real love is an action. It is a verb. It is work. Real love is work. One person's definition of love, I'm sure some of you have read it, is it is an effort, a work on my part to enlarge somebody else's spiritual life. And in that context, spirituality meant everything about the person, mentally, physically, socially, economically, politically, sexually. In essence, am I giving up myself to promote somebody else's welfare? And what I think is, and again, I'm not very good at this, is I'm either working on improving our intimacy connection or I'm tearing it down. Okay? I'm tearing it down. Boundaries, what are the behaviors that are acceptable in our relationship that, you know, that I am willing to have a relationship with her if these behaviors are present? What behaviors are not acceptable in our relationship? Incessant criticizing and controlling and putting me down. I really can't, I don't do very well with that. I can't live with that. So that has to be something that's not a part, that's not inside the boundaries. Me trying to control her, manipulate her, get what I want. She has her list of things that are not acceptable inside our boundaries. In the end, the goal is so that we can really connect with one another and relate with one another in all areas. Decision making, problem solving, finances, raising the children. We have a daughter that's in jail now. She spent 6 months in jail this year, primarily due to her drug addiction. And she's going to go to another treatment facility. We turned her in so that she could get back in jail rather than get arrested again and go to prison. And that's required a real joint effort on our part. Okay, what I'm going to do now is open this up for sharing or questions. And I think really what we're going to have to do is just come up to the mic, be seated, and speak. And then I'll give you 2 or 3 minutes. So.
Hi, my name's Clint, and I'm a sexaholic. This is my biggest problem in my disease, I think, is lusting over my wife. I've known my wife since, we've been married since 2002, and I find myself, my biggest problem in my disease really is fantasy. All of my acting out and everything has always started in a fantasy in my head. I can fantasize about anything at any time, and it always turns into a lust thing every time, and now that I have stopped lusting over prostitutes and other people I see on the street, I lust about my wife. I can lust about her anywhere. And the weirdest thing about my relationship with my wife is I don't see her from Sunday night till Thursday night because I work different schedule than her, and so then 4 days I don't see her is the 4 hardest days through the week. The other 3 days I'm okay because I'm by her side, but then 4 days I don't see her is when my brain will really want to act out and want me to act out. And if I don't stop myself the moment that it starts, then it will turn into me searching for prostitutes and out of sex. I mean, go on and on and on. It can end up anywhere at any time. So I really wanted to come to this to get some input, because if I don't learn how to deal with this part of my disease, I will never recover completely. I mean, I've come a long way since last November. My sobriety is November 13th of 08, and And since then, I have really felt like the obsession of being wanting to be with anonymous people and, you know, and people I don't know has really been lifted. But wanting to use my wife to better myself or feel better about myself is where my problems exist now. And I'm really trying not to use her in the bad ways. You know, I mean, I can be having sex with my wife and or be intimate with my wife and not even think of her in any way, and that is what I'm really trying not to do anymore. It's one of the hardest things I have dealt with. I've even come to the point of almost leaving my wife just so I wouldn't abuse her in them ways anymore. And that's a very hard decision I'm pondering on still. Not that I don't want to be with her anymore, so I don't want to harm her anymore. And every time that I allow myself to go through this, I know it's hurting her more and more and more, just like it's hurting me. So it's a very hard thing to go through. But thank you.
Thanks for sharing.
Dennis, sexaholic. I know that all of us struggle with this. If you have solutions, if you have experiences, a little trick, a little tool, something your sponsor has shared with you, something you discovered, something you've heard, something God provided for you, share that with us here today, please.
Hello, my name is Mike, and I'm a grateful recovering sexaholic. Dennis, thanks for your share. I'm 61 years old. I've been married and divorced 3 times. I'm on my 4th marriage. And what my sponsor has taught me in the 11 months that I've been in the program, I've had 9 weeks of sobriety yesterday, is the difference between lust and love. I married my first wife because she was a beauty queen. We were married for 11 years. I objectivized, fantasized her. I went into a rebound marriage 9 months later for the same exact reason. And it progressively got worse. My third wife, who I married our marriage was annulled about a month later. She saw it during the honeymoon and realized what a mistake we had made and basically told me, you know, I don't love you, you don't love me, and we made a mistake. My current wife, Connie, and I have been married for 12 years. I came into this program, it was my third attempt. I'd been addicted for 35 years. It was my third attempt because she discovered something that I'd written down in a workbook in a different type of program. It was not a 12-step. I think probably some of the biggest stuff that has hit me this morning with what Dennis has shared is seeing my wife as a person and not an object. And not a piece of meat who has body parts that I might have some fetish about. When I check in, I share that my disease manifests itself because of pride, ego, self-centeredness, and selfishness. And that's who I am. But my sobriety is the first step for my recovery. And I'm just now beginning to appreciate what my higher power has given me through a miracle that took place 12 years ago when I met my wife. And at 61, that's hard to do. Very hard to do. This is my first conference. I'm very excited to be here, and I am very happy to be in this room. Thanks, Dennis. Appreciate it.
Hi everyone, I'm Terry. I'm a recovering sexaholic. Couple of quick things. One of the things that I've had to do was within my marriage, I've been married about 20 years, I've been in the program about 7. I'm 2.5 years sober now. And lust within my marriage is still, you know, in a struggle for me. And I've had to, you know, it says in our literature that sex is optional. And I've had to give up the desire to initiate sex with my wife, that me for myself. And I'm not saying that we've agreed to be abstinent, but that I am not, in order to work my program well, I myself had to give up the initiation portion of this. Because the insidious nature of this disease for me was that, throughout the day, various kinds of things, there's always this, it sets an expectation for me that something's going to happen. And so the way that I would interact with my wife would be based on that. I heard a speaker once say that, he said, he thought in such a way that there should be, conversion chart on the back of cleaning products. I vacuumed the rug, I cleaned the bathroom, I did the dishes. This should, equal so much sexual activity, at some point over the weekend, because I'm such a good guy and I'm really helping you out. It's funny, but it's true, those expectations that that these things are going to happen is still part of the disease for me, and I have to let go of that, and so that gets to the point from the first speaker talking about here and now, that the whole goal is to be here and now, that I'm doing what I'm doing with my wife, with my family, not because I expect something in return for this, but because it's the right thing to do, and this is how, this is how you love, which I'm just learning in the program how to love other people, which means not expecting something in return. The other thing that I've had to do for me, and again it gets to that here and now kind of thing, is that on the occasion where my wife and I are physically intimate, because fantasy has been a problem for me, I need to keep my eyes open, so that and this has been very, very difficult for me, but so that I'm not, because as soon as I close my eyes, it takes about a half a second and I can be somewhere else. And that's just some stuff that I've had to do in this very important area. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Scott, sexaholic. I've been sexually sober one day at a time for just over 6 years, and my wife has also been in recovery for about 6 years as well. For me, a lust-free marriage has evolved over the past 6 years. It wasn't like a lightning bolt that just happened all at once. It was a series of things that happened. I had caused quite a bit of damage in the marriage, and that all came out in disclosure 6 years ago in treatment. And having sex with my wife was probably very, very low on the list, or being intimate with my wife from her perspective for quite a while. But we did, I think one of the biggest, a number of things happened in treatment, but one of the biggest things was a period of abstinence or celibacy, which ended up lasting about 18 months. And that was we've been married for 14 years, and 8 of those years, I was acting out in one form or another. So those 18 months of abstinence following disclosure and in early recovery was really the basis for our lust-free marriage. What we now have is a lust-free marriage, and it's not perfectly lust-free, but it's very close to being lust-free. And during those 18 months of celibacy and abstinence, that's where I really got to know my wife. As a person. So we all talk about, not objectifying our partners and spouses, but when the physical intimacy was off the table and contractually off the table, it made it much easier for me. It took just a lot of pressure off of both of us to be able to establish a relationship with each other. Now, we already had 2 children at the time, and so there were a lot of complicated things that happened during those 18 months, but the reality was I got to know her as a wife. I got to know her as a mother. I got to know her as a sister. I got to know her as a friend. I got to know her as a intimate partner, but non-sexual intimate partner. And for all those areas, just to be able to learn that was a miracle. And a number of things also happened during those 18 months. We worked very hard in couples therapy. My wife was very, very angry at the damage that I had caused. And so we had to spend a lot of time doing living amends. I had to spend a lot of time doing living amends with my wife. Showing up as a parent, you know, was a huge thing. And the kinds of things that kind of built back trust for my wife had nothing to do with physical intimacy. They had everything to do with, you know, would I call and offer to pick up milk on the way home from a meeting? You know, would I say to her, don't worry about getting the kids off the bus today, I'll take care of it. You know, those were the kinds of things that rebuilt the trust in the marriage that eventually, after time, allowed us to return to a much more intimate marriage and then ultimately being physical with each other. The other work that we've done, which has been really important, is we do daily check-ins where we check in with each other physically, emotionally, spiritually. We talk about what's going on in the relationship. And sex for us, or intimacy now, is optional. It's not a requirement. And it needs to be something that we both agree we're ready for. And so we have to have that kind of meeting of the minds with each other that says, are you ready? Are you ready? Are you okay? Are you okay? And then it can happen. But it has to be something that's mutually agreed upon with each other. And again, it's optional. It's not the top plate for us in the marriage right now. And so we have, you know, a miracle transformed relationship and marriage. My wife has been here. She's come to, I think I've been to 8 or 9 or 10 conferences in the last 6 years, and she's been to every one. We go to couples meetings, SAS and on couples meetings. And the other thing that 18 months did that I'll close with is, you know, I had all these tapes in my head of all these kinds of, you know, videos and places I'd acted out and people I'd acted out with, et cetera, et cetera. And so that whole library, that 18 months was a way to let that library, soften and become less, important in my mind. And so, again, I'm not going to sit here and tell you it's not perfect and that I don't have moments where stuff comes in, but it's a lot better than it was 6 years ago. Thanks for letting me share.
Well, I'm Bob, and my disease is sexual addiction. I have other addictions which I've dealt with earlier in my life that I came to terms with without 12 steps, but for sexual addiction I needed the 12 steps. And I hit bottom 6 months ago in a counseling session with my wife and recognized that my denial broke, and I opened up to her and began the 12 steps, and have been abstinent in my addiction since then. I've been I'm very pleased that I've been blessed with that. One of the gifts that I was given very early was the I too can play a tape. It can start in an instant. And I'm able to recognize in that instant that a tape has started to play. And I'm able to use the first step to say, okay, my brain is doing something that I really don't want it to do. I've lost control. My brain has become unmanageable. That's the first step. Second step is to say, okay, there's a tape that's about to start playing. I know that if I turn that over to God immediately, that tape isn't going to run. And the third step is I start saying the Lord's Prayer. Just as soon as I know that the tape is starting, I start saying the Lord's Prayer. And my brain cannot say the Lord's Prayer and run a tape at the same time. It just can't do it. And sometimes I've had to repeat the Lord's Prayer 2 or 3 times to make sure that the tape isn't going to start playing again. But, you know, for me, that's the first 3 steps. And it was really a blessing for me to get those and work those first 3 steps in the early part of my recovery. That has allowed me to operate without the old tape playing for 6 months, which has been a real blessing. my wife and I have continued to be intimate and have sexual relationships, and I have been completely free of having fantasies of other women when I'm having sexual relationships with my wife. And I can at the present time be present and not run off to another place or another time while I'm with her. And I work on doing that all the time, not just when we're approaching sexual intimacy, but doing that all the time that we're together. And that makes sexual intimacy a much more natural place for us to be in. I'm not yet at the point where I'm totally I'm not saying this very clearly, but when we are together, I can be very much present in my body, and I can be very much aware of her body and not be anywhere else. But being communicative, talking, that's the part that we're still working on. She's doing her program and I'm doing my program, and we have just begun going to programs together, Recovering Couples Anonymous, which is an organization which brings husbands and wives together into the same meetings. My wife and I have been going to CODA meetings together, so that we're actually in the same room, talking about the same things, talking about both of our recovery, the recovery of our relationship. And for us, after 6 months of struggling individually, we're starting to struggle together in this 12 steps format. And I'm very positive about the future of our relationship. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dennis, still sexaholic. I just want to make a comment here. If you notice, the speakers here, in sharing the various spiritual actions they're taking, they're talking about taking an action. It's so easy for me to forget that this is not a thinking program, that this is not an understanding program, that this is not something that I come to a meeting like this and write down notes and have good awarenesses and write those down too and then go home and set it aside. What I am looking for here in this conference this weekend are some new actions to add to my recovery, daily recovery process. And so be mindful of the actions that you're hearing here, because those are things we can all do and take with us and share with others in sponsorship.
Good morning, my name is Matt, and I'm a grateful recovering sexaholic. I went away for a 30-day program 6 months into my recovery here in SA. Ended up being a 37-day program. Didn't expect that. I thought I was going to be one of those guys who was going to leave after 30 days. I made a commitment to that. But then after lying for 10 days, I turned myself over to the program a little more each day. But one of the things I feared was my wife doing a cost letter. Cost letter is basically, what my addiction has cost her. So I knew what the cost letter was going to say, all the horrible things that she found out that I had done. And it was nothing like I expected, but it was much worse. I thought I was I thought I was husband of the year, father of the year, everything up until the point that she had found out about it. And I didn't think I brought any of these things into the home. And when she said in that cost letter, that I treated her like a piece of meat, how selfish I was, and the fact that she had planned on leaving me 6 years before that, but just didn't know how to do it. And that was like news to me, because I was like, whoa, her finding out about this addiction probably saved our marriage, because otherwise she wouldn't know what the hell was going on with me, because every time she'd ask me, even she saw it in my eyes, is everything okay? And of course not. I can't let them know. I got to be perfect. God, I was so far from that. So that cost letter was the beginning of me realizing how much damage I had done to her. And I did the full disclosure there, and she filed for divorce that night. But one thing that I had done, and I really thought that there was no chance for the marriage, but before the night before I left, and I stayed an extra 7 days because I had no place to go when I came home, is I wrote her a letter. And all I wanted, maybe there was some manipulation in that letter. I don't think so, but who knows? I'm an addict. One thing that I wanted to say to her was that, you know, I loved her the best way that I could, and I didn't mean to treat her like a piece of meat. And I wanted an opportunity to love her the way she deserved to be loved. And it started making me realize, you know, really, that I never treated her with any respect. And so, you know, I've been very fortunate to have a great sponsor, and the biggest thing he's probably shared with me, among many things, was something he's about 8 months ahead of me and rebuilding his marriage. And the biggest action that I take is that, and it's, I realized just the other night, you know, when I was in group therapy, you know, our therapist was talking about not group therapy, it was actually my Friday morning meeting, what is our anchor? I do a lot of disciplines in my recovery, but he said, there's one that's one that you never miss. And I realized in the past year plus, I've never missed giving her a pledge. I pledge to her every morning my fidelity. I pledge to her my love. I pledge to her that I will reach out to another suffering individual. I pledge to her that I will text her during the day, that I will call her, that I will be open, that I will put away the dishes, you know, that I will do this, that, and the other thing. And I basically, in that morning, what I'm doing is I'm telling her what my program is. And it's not the same every day. It's different every day. It's got some of the same things, but that's the thing that I have to do. One last thing is, you know, and that sets me up in a good way for most of the day. And I really don't, for the most part, struggle with any fantasy or anything like that. And I'm with her. When I'm with her and intimately, I'm with her. But what I do have to do is I have to, the most important thing for me is to be honest, because one of the problems in my addiction has always been that I just shrug things aside. Oh, this doesn't really bother me. And then I bury it. So I have to be honest with myself, and so that when I'm intimate with her, that I'm not trying to soothe myself. And you know, we've caught ourselves a few times, and she's got some similar things going on as me. So we've caught ourselves a few times saying it didn't feel right last night, or we've caught ourselves as we're being intimate, saying tonight's not the right night. You know, so it's not perfect, but we talk about it, and I'm not afraid to talk so much. And you know, so I'm still working on that, but it's good to have that open communication, and I can be honest, you know, with her, and you know, and not have to feel like we have to be with each other intimately. That it's okay to be tired, which I never was tired before because I was always revved up. So it's okay just to be tired. It's a gift to be tired and just go to sleep and not feel like we have to be intimate, you know, or have sex. Really, at that point, it would be sex. It wouldn't be intimacy. So that's all I've got, and thanks for letting me share.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Mark. I'm a sexaholic. This disease is life or death for me. My sobriety date is December 14th of 07. I've just barely had over a year, so I'm very new at this. I thank Dennis for keeping us focused on the tools of recovery. I really like that, so thank you. The tools that have really helped me in this year, one of the first things I heard at a meeting was, anytime you feel entitled to your wife's body, you got big problems. And you are setting yourself up for a big slip. That was something, one of the first big things I wrote and put on a 3x5 card on my mirror. Since that time, about 5 or 6 months ago, I was really struggling. Something was wrong. I knew something was amiss. I knew I had lust somewhere. I just didn't know where it was. And I realized I was lusting after my wife. And that part of the white book had always confused me, kind of baffled me. I didn't understand what this lusting after your wife was. But I did identify it. And what we've changed in our marriage, or what I've changed in my life, and I affirm as tools, take them or leave them, as one, I've given my wife her privacy back. We used to get dressed together in the bathroom and do our little body maintenance things there together. I don't do that anymore. I choose to do something else while she gets ready. The image, you know, it's just something I choose not to be around. And that has helped immensely. Some other things, is we invite, I invite our higher power into the bedroom when we are choosing to be physically intimate. I pray out loud on my knees before any time we have physical intimacy. Praying out loud for me, for some reason, has been a wonderful tool. She sometimes chooses to join me, sometimes doesn't, and just listens to my prayer. We certainly have an agreement that at any time during physical intimacy, we can, either one of us can stop, say stop. And she knows what I struggle with in my brain, and she's okay to, if I say I can't, I got to stop. And someone else mentioned too, keeping your eyes open. Not only do we keep our eyes open, but I look only at her face. If I'm looking at other stuff, then I'm not celebrating our love with this woman that I adore. I'm slipping slowly. I'm getting close to the precipice of my addiction. So I just look in her eyes. We pray. We have that agreement that we can stop. What? And yeah. Thank you. My brother in recovery. And we keep the lights on, and we just look at each other's face. But the coolest thing really has been the privacy thing, and that's just something I hadn't heard before. Give your wife back her privacy. So thanks for letting me share.
Hey, Claire.
I'm Alan, recovering sexaholic. Grateful to be here. Great to hear the shares, and thanks for the lead, Dennis. When I first came into program, I had no clue what I had done to my wife for 25 years, or 20 years, I'm sorry, it was 20-year marriage when I came in. I didn't do them intentionally, but I had done them. She let me know. I didn't like that. And so I had to start working on myself and put her out of the picture and just focus on myself. And what I started to do, realize that I didn't love myself too much. And if I didn't love myself, I certainly couldn't love another person. So by working the steps, I started to love myself. And that was too tough also, so I just started to accept myself. I'm a sexaholic. So if I'm a sexaholic, I'm selfish, self-centered, egotistical. It's all about me. I'm the best, I'm the worst. You're the best, you're the worst. And restless, irritable, and discontented on a daily basis. That's who I am. And when I realized that, I realized that's a pretty horrible person to be around. So she didn't need to change, I did. But I couldn't change me, and I certainly couldn't change her. So what I started to do is I started to do actions of love. Started buying her flowers every weekend. Sometimes said, oh, you're just buying me that because you want sex. Probably most of the time she was right, but I didn't stop doing it anyways. Started to do the dishes. I started to do simple things, and she saw that I just kept doing them irregardless of her feelings. I just kept doing those actions of love. Then we started to date. We went out for coffee after the meeting once a week. It was pretty painful. It was pretty uncomfortable at first, just sitting there alone for 10, 15 minutes. At the beginning, we didn't really say much, but we just did that. We did that every week, and that turned into dinner once a week, which turned into going to a movie once a week. Was turning to going to a weekend vacation. Was turning this week. I just came back from a cruise with my wife. After 25 years of marriage, we never done that before. Recently, I set up, and doing these actions, I realized her pain of being married to me, and that must have been awful. That was something that I had to feel. I had to feel her pain. That's a horrible place to be. And why would somebody like that want to be intimate with me? I wouldn't want to be intimate with me. I certainly didn't. That's why I acted out, because I didn't want to be with myself. Well, if I didn't want to be with myself, she certainly didn't want to be with me. And with time, what I did with the, as far as the lust, I realized that I was still lusting. And I realized the difference of having sex with my wife and making love to my wife. And I didn't want to have sex with my wife anymore, because I did that for 20 years with prostitutes. And she certainly wasn't a prostitute. So I told her, if you're not in the mood, I don't want to do this. I just don't want to do that. And I realized I couldn't initiate either. And then I set up another boundary that I needed. When she would call me during the day and, you know, she was thinking about me and, you know, getting excited, I said, please don't do that anymore. don't let me know that you want to have sex, because by the nighttime, women are different. They change their minds with, you know, the drop of a hat. You tell me on Sunday that we're having sex on Saturday, I'm thinking about it the whole week. So I said, I can't hear that anymore. Don't ask me to have sex any other time than we're just about to have it, because I just can't handle that, because that's really hard for me. And I've also learned to say no. I'm just not in the mood right now. And something else that's been huge is, well, some of y'all share this also, that when we're having sex and she's just not into it, and I say, honey, you don't want this? And she'll hoo and ha, and I said, it's okay, I'll stop. And I stop. It's okay. And for me today, I don't have to have sex today, and I say that every day. I don't have to have sex today, just like I don't have to lust. And if we have it, it's great. If we don't, I don't expect it. And that's really worked for me. And this is just the actions, and I just kind of take those actions. One other thing that I did, I didn't even realize, I used to call her up and sing on the in the middle of the day. Just call her up or leave a message, honey, I'm just calling to say I love you. And I remember Stevie Wonder's song. So I don't have a great voice, but I would sing it. And at work, I would call up and start singing. I just called to say I love you. She put it on speakerphone. And she would call her coworker and say, listen, this is what my husband is doing. So you never know.
We have 10 minutes left.
Hello everyone, my name is John. I'm a sex addict from Baltimore. And I know this is a program. I have resentments, but the program of resentments and forgiveness. So I forgive Dennis from jumping up here before me when I came up before him. So, I guess I got busted when I've been married for 30 years. And I guess the experience when my wife found out what was going on was like, I call it turning her upside down, dropping her on her head. And I was out of the house for 2 years, and we didn't have sex or intimacy until 18 months later, when she was at the point where she thought it was okay, she initiated it. And things are really great with us right now. We still have problems. You know, one thing I'd ask her, I said, do you mind wearing perfume? And she said, no, I only do that when I go out with other people. So, I don't know, that could be lust. I hope it's not. But, I guess for me is it sex is optional, that if I asked her to have sex and she doesn't want to, I don't have a resentment around it, because it used to be always about me, and it was never about what was going on with her. And if she didn't want to have sex in the night, we'd get a resentment. I used to be able to. It's also a lot about communication. That I I expected her to read my mind, and I would never really say what I wanted, but I get the resentment. And right now, things are very, very well. We end up, we have a hug in the morning and the evening, whether it's sex or not. And just being with her, and she said it's not always about the sex, it's just about being hugged and cared for. And people were talking about taking the actions of love, and one thing I wrote in the about your wife is when she asks you to do something, do it right now. Don't wait till you feel like it. So thank you, everyone. I'm grateful to be here.
Thanks for sharing.
Thank you.
Kirby, I'm a sexaholic. It's about as clumsy as I've been in my marriage and in my sobriety for years, too. So, 38 years of marriage in 13 days. My wife has stayed with me for who knows what reason. All these years, never left, never kicked me out. So I've been blessed. That's only by God. So it's all that's been. What I wanted to share is, for years I have, when people ask me how I was, whether it was work, church, these rooms, family, friends, or my wife, I'd say fine. And for some years now, every time I said fine, in my mind I was going over what definition I've heard from us, frustrated, insecure, neurotic, emotionally disturbed, or something like that. And I'm thinking, yeah, I'm fine, but I've got my mask on, so I can't tell you what fine really means to me. Well, I quit saying that about a year ago. And I shared in a room recently that now I say I'm okay. And yet, during that same share, I said, but I'm big on, I love acronyms, ego and HALT and all the stuff we say, but I haven't found an acronym for okay. So a young man in that meeting, after the meeting was over, came up to me. He had shared that he had only been in recovery for a week. And so, what could I glean from him? Well, let me tell you. He said, how about on knees? And I thought about that for a long time. I started using okay, and I started thinking about that, and then that was the action. As long as I'm on knees, and I added the, if you want to spell it out in four letters, okay, A-Y, it's and willing. It's not just getting on my knees, but I've got to be willing to let God. But as long as I'm okay, then that goes from work to church to family friends. It goes to the bedroom too with my wife. I need to ask myself, am I okay? And if I come up to the answer that no, I'm fine, I don't need to expect to have sex with her. And that's worked as well as anything's worked in my sobriety, because I came to my first room 16 and a half years ago, and I got my 1 year chip last December. So I have a lot of shame and guilt over why I can't do this. The way I've done this year, finally, was with a higher power. I had left him out, and this program won't work without being okay, on my knees and willing. Thanks.
We have time for one more.
I'm Carlos. I'm a sexaholic. And last night I got my 1 year, 14 months, and I stated it's the best 14 years of my life since I was 10 years old. And I'm God blessed for every one of you all for being here, and I can feel His presence here. One of the things that I had to realize was growing up in a certain religion is I had a very twisted definition of their definition of sex. And learning about through this 12-step program and learning how to redefine what that really means. And all I wanted to say is that that's been the journey that I'm taking with my wife right now, is understanding that this is a spiritual union. And it's an everyday union. And I thank every one of you all today that shared what has been working for you, because it's going to be very helpful for me. Thank you.
One more? One quick one? There we go.
I'm Mark. I'm a sex addict. I'll make this real quickly. One thing, and this really isn't sexaholic material, but it's a book that really helped me called The Five Love Languages. And if you've read that, I read that before I even got into this program, and I think it was one of those things that got me to realize that I was not, being very good to my wife. And so I think that really opened my mind and started me down this journey. But I recommend that. In summary, it's everything that we've talked about here today. So thanks for letting me share.
In closing, let me remind all of us that anything you've heard at this meeting is strictly the opinion of the individual participant. The principles of SA are found in our 12 steps and 12th tradition. And let's close with the Lord's Prayer.
Good job.
Who never misses a meeting.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and power, and glory forever and ever. Amen. Keep coming back. It works if you work. It's a work of the world.
It's a work of the world. It's a work of the world. Everybody's got this time.
That was great.
A couple people got tangled in the wires and stuff, but I think for the most part, it should have worked out.